Yeah. Who said that? Who said that? Yeah, good. Good job over there. Thank you. Yeah, this was one of those days where I wish I was a little more prepared. And I said to myself, well, I hope the singer will be good. And she was, so there you go. So. Anyway, you know, my problem with this topic is that I feel like I know so much about it. I've been thinking about what I'm talking about for years and years and years, for over 20 years, about the metaphors and the miracles of Christmas. Jumping back just a little bit, I want to just let you know a little bit about this center in case you're new here. We bless all paths to God. In fact, when new people come to the service, I hear the most consistent feedback I get is that the congregation is warm and wonderful. People cry when we sing, I am remembering who I am. And they love it in the final prayer when I say, we bless all paths to God, because we do. We know that there's not only one way to explain and to embody the vastness that is spirit. So we take bits and pieces from lots of different religions and enjoy the different perspectives that we have just to deepen us, to polish different facets of the jewel of God or love or whatever it is you want to call it. So this week, I'm speaking about Christmas. Next week, I have Nemo Patel coming, who is a Hindu, but the topic is Inshallah, which is Arabic, Muslim thing, for God willing, right? Yeah, if God wills, yeah. And then the following week is the first night of Hanukkah, but we're lighting a menorah on Sunday, hopefully. And if I can get somebody to do it for me, no pressure, okay? Yeah, but this week we're speaking about the metaphors and the miracles of Christmas. And I had Hugh read that beautiful poem about Mary because I see that the cast of characters in the Christmas story, let's just talk about the basic trio, right? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, okay? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph are allegorical figures that represent aspects of ourselves. So defining what they mean for us, what is Jesus? Jesus, the Christ, right? The Christ is a word that is used by many, many different faith traditions, and it means that one who is anointed or one who is enlightened. And when I speak of the Christ, to me it means that person, that being, that first of all is in everything. Christ is another name for everything because the incarnation took place when reality was created, the incarnation of spirit becoming matter. But it's also that individual that knows his or her complete wholeness. Ernest Holmes said that the consciousness of wholeness is the consciousness of healing. And wholeness means the willingness to be present with everything as it is. And so it is. So we're always evolving our ability to abide in wholeness. And that's where I believe Mary and Joseph come in. Mary is often seen as a symbol of love. And Joseph is often seen as a symbol of truth or integrity, love and law. Ernest Holmes said that love points the way and that law makes it happen. So our loving intention gives direction to the forces of spiritual law that make things happen. In this teaching, we believe that our thought is creative, so that our thought creates the reality that we wish to experience, or actually creates our experience of reality. That's what that symbol up there stands for. Who knows what the V stands for? No. It stands for Vishla, which is the kind of dog that I have. Yeah. No, the V shows the descent of thought into form. And so I don't take it as literally as some teachers do. I believe certainly, though, that our thought creates our experience of life as it happens, right? So, you know, if you're thinking thoughts of lack, you will experience lack. If you're thinking thoughts of complaining, anybody here ever think thoughts of complaining? I've been working on that a lot lately. The class I'm teaching about abundance says you're not supposed to complain. I don't know what I'm going to do. Anyway, our thoughts of complaining give us something to complain about, right? Because if we're looking at life through the lens of complaint, we see lots more of things to complain about. But if we're looking through the life through the lens of offering, that creates a different experience. We're offering our life in service to this thing. So those characters, I believe, are love and law that help us evolve the presence of the Christ consciousness within each of us. So as we proceed through this morning, through this talk and through this message and through this fellowship, I invite you to ask yourself, is there something new, some higher order of wholeness or well-being that seeks to be born through me this morning, right here and right now? It may not happen. You may not go from 0 to 60, or you may, who knows? But is there some spiritual quality, if you can distill it down to a spiritual quality such as love or peace or joy, I want more abundance in my life, I want to experience more happiness. If you can distill it down to a spiritual quality, more service, more inspiration, then just with me, hold open the space that can be born in you here this morning and that it can change your life. Because as we know, we're planting seeds, and those seeds have ripples. And what you discover about yourself and your process here can make a complete difference, not only for your life, but the work that we do here blesses all beings. Okay? Does everybody have something that wants to be born in their life? You don't have to shout it out. Just thank you. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Mary. I'm going to assume that many of you know the basic plot, but I'm going to give you kind of the bullet points of the Mary story. So Mary is a pious Jewish woman, and she's minding her own business one day, and then, oh, the angel Gabriel comes to her, right? Just like that. Oh. You know, I have my own very unusual version of the Bible, okay? So we're just going to deal with the Bonnie Rose translation of the Bible. And the angel Gabriel says to Mary, Mary, you are not going to believe this, but you are going to be impregnated and carry the Son of God, give birth to the Son of God. And Mary, rather than going, what are you talking about? She does ask one question. She says, how can this be, for no man has known me? She's just asking a clarifying question. She is a pious woman and therefore a virgin, right? And so the angel Gabriel says to her, the Holy Spirit will come to you and he or she will impregnate you with the Son of God and you will give birth to him. And then Mary says, yes. She says, let it be with me according to thy will. I did some reading and listening to Cynthia Bourgeau, who is kind of a Mary expert. She's an Episcopal priest and is very, very wise and has a very beautiful way of communicating. She said that Mary is like the mother of all contemplatives, that Mary demonstrates the co-creative process of something that wishes to be born within us, and that how we get our smaller self out of the way and we can ask maybe one question, but then we just say yes to that higher vision that wants to be born through us. In the poem that Hugh read, and Cynthia Bourgeau pointed this out too, you know, we are often taught to think of Mary as meek and mild and kind of passive, but she talks about how Mary is also the model for courage and for bold surrender. So many people think that surrendering to love is just letting go and just acting passive, but it's not. It is an active principle where we constantly renew ourselves and say, there is a power that is greater than me. There is a wholeness that is greater than my small mind that seeks expression through me. How can I get out of the way and make my life an offering in service to that power? And that's what Mary does. She gets out of the way and allows the divine to be born within her. So I ask each of you again today, is there some yes that is coming to your mind, something that you would like to express, something that wants to be born within you? And are you saying yes? Or are you saying maybe? Or are you saying, yeah, when conditions are right, when I have a little more money, and when my house is cleaner? That's not going to happen in my house. Then you can start. I've read that happens with a lot of writers. You know, a lot of people that want to write say that they're going to write the book or they're going to write what they're going to write when they're ready to write. You know why I'm laughing about that? Because so often what we're called to do, we are not ready to do it. And that's part of the mystery. You think in the allegory of Mary that she was ready to give birth to God, right? Yeah, somebody has to. Oh, I've gotten rusty because it scares the dogs. Okay. We have to say yes before we're ready to say yes. So if there is something within you, something that you're afraid to say yes to, some yes that you're procrastinating about, maybe take just a second look at that and say to yourself, maybe just today, and if you're really bold, I will say yes to this thing that wants to be born in me today. I will claim it, and it is safe to claim it, because it's not my yes. It is the yes of wholeness that wants to use me in its greatness. How about that? Then there's Joseph. Now, Joseph is kind of an unsung hero of that story. There's not a lot written about Joseph. He's kind of like, what do they call it in acting? Second man on the left, you know? He doesn't really seem to have a big part in that story, but I believe that Joseph has a very crucial role in this story. Again, the basic plot. So in the book of Matthew, the book of Luke is focused on Mary. In the book of Matthew, they focus on Joseph's experience. And Joseph finds out, again, this is my version of the story. Joseph finds out that that Mary is pregnant. He's engaged to her, and they have not been together yet. And then she comes to him and she says, guess what? I'm pregnant. Now, if you were Joseph, how would you respond to that? See, I'm not allowed to say those words in church, so, you know, I think if it had been me, I would have responded differently. But Joseph was a pious man, it says, so he was thinking of divorcing her secretly. Now, this I read about this yesterday, and what this means is that when it says that Joseph was a pious man, it means that he knew the law. He knew Hebrew law. And he knew that if someone that he was engaged to got pregnant and it wasn't his child, he could have her stoned to death. But he was a pious man, and he knew the law. And so he decided to divorce her in secret so as not to shame her. Joseph's goodness starts to shine through right there. His goodness and his willingness to look beyond man-made laws into a higher order of law, which is spiritual law. You know, I was reading Richard Rohr and Cynthia Bourgeau the other day, and they were talking about welcoming the LGBTQ community into our churches and how churches in the past have been so unkind to that community. And they were talking about Jesus and how Jesus never said anything against people of the LGBTQ community. And they said, you know, just even if he had, really, seriously, Jesus was all about the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. So if you're making a decision about whether somebody is excluded or included, excluded because the law says so, always go for inclusion. Always go for love. Always go for compassion. Because laws are human-made, and the law of compassion is wholeness and divine. And so we welcome everything. Joseph welcomed Mary's goodness, and therefore was able to transcend the law and talk about divorcing her secretly so that she wouldn't be shamed. Or stoned. Thank you. Feel free to call out anything, seriously. I love audience participation. It's like my thing. I almost wish there were more of it, she said hesitantly. Yeah. But that's not how the story ends, does it? He doesn't divorce her secretly, because Joseph has made this leap in consciousness where he's willing to look past man-made law into the laws of compassion. An angel comes to him in a dream, which means in a higher state of consciousness or in a meditation, and the angel says, marry her, help her give birth, be her protector, help her bring this into being. And he does that through his action, through his willingness. Through his willingness to change his mind from the facts. The law can seem so much like it's the facts and the way it is, and to have a broader perspective. It's like when Ernest Holmes says that spiritual truth transcends solid facts. The solid fact was that he should either have her stoned or divorce her. The spiritual truth that goes against everything the ego wants to do is that he should support her and love her and be part of the conduit for wholeness being born in the earth. And you know that, by the way, when I say that, I'm not talking about an individual situation. This is about all of us, all of the time. Meister Eckhart said that God did not only beget but one son. He is forever begetting the only begotten. Got that? Do you guys know the song Begin the Begat? Great song. I will not sing it. So this is a story about all of us. I just want to keep reminding us that we're not speaking about three individuals. We're speaking about an allegory that applies to all of us. So how do we act like Joseph? I see two Josephs. I see two Josephs. Joseph before the dream with the angel and Joseph after the dream with the angel. I am privileged to have my own inner Joseph that doubts and fears when I have a yes sometimes and thinks that it's not a legitimate yes. But then I have an outer Joseph who is the Joseph after the dream, the one that sees the angel, that sees the potential, and that is my husband, Hugh. Really? You didn't know I was going to talk about this. But I have many stories of this. And it's my doubter and my fear. Whenever I want to do something kind of different than perhaps what I thought was part of the plan, I always have this trepidation. I must be a really slow learner because I've done this many times. And I always have this trepidation of like, uh-oh, I'm going to have to ask him about this. How's this going to be? How's this conversation going to go? I want to go to Jordan and work with Syrian refugees. What? No, it doesn't go like that at all. He's like, oh, great. Okay, good. When? When I decided to go into ministry, you know, he had married an opera singer, an actress, a nurse, and all of this stuff, and we had a really nice life, and then I decided to ruin it all by going to the School of Ministry, and I knew that it would make big changes, and I knew that our lives would change together. And so I remember it was Valentine's Day in 1996, I believe it was, and we went to Jerry's Deli in the San Fernando Valley, and I knew I needed to talk to him about it because applications were getting ready to be filled out, and I needed to have this conversation with him, and I was going to wait until we got the food, but I couldn't control myself. So we're ordering, we're looking at the menu, and I blurt out, I think I want to be a minister. Moment of silence. He says, oh, good. I think I want to have the chicken tonight. What? Yeah, he said it's a great adventure, right? Yeah, okay. We remember it differently. Have you ever noticed in marriage you remember things differently, right? Yeah. He did tell me it would be a great adventure and that he would support me. So he's the outer Joseph that sometimes has to lift up my inner Joseph. And the truth is that as we are lifted up more by the outer Joseph, we can do that for ourselves and we can do that for others too. I have asked many things over the years where I thought there was going to be objection and there hasn't been. And it's even like, you know, going away and having him stay home and take care of all the animals and, you know, it's not really pretty, but it's just one thing after another. He constantly says yes. Because he trusts that there is something great that wants to be born through us and through me and through him, and I do the same thing for him. So we can do that for ourselves. We can be that Joseph that sees beyond the law of the ego, the rule of the ego that says it needs to be this way. You're already a singer, a nurse, an actress. You need to stay in the career that you've chosen, for God's sake. You can't go off and be a minister somewhere. And then we're living happily in the valley, and then this church opens up in Ventura, and I say to him, I think I want to work in Ventura. Let's move there. And he, what does he say? Yes. Yeah, he got a job in Ventura, in Camarillo. Yeah, so it's like that. It's the willingness to support the yes with action and with backup and with living like the truth is true. Living like the truth of wholeness that wants to be born through us is true. So that yes that you discovered as you were thinking about thinking about what wants to be born through you, what wants to say yes through you, and maybe some of you were saying, yeah, maybe later, or, oh, I don't know, that's too much for me, or I don't think I can do that, or I need this kind of support before I do that. Just let that go, let that go. Let the inner, those are the rules and the laws of the ego. Those are the laws that say that the dream needs to be stoned, right? And by stoned, I mean throwing stones. I don't mean the other stone. The dream needs to be stoned. And just let that go. Let that go and allow that Joseph after the dream that knows greater possibilities to come forth and to support that dream in one small way. If you support your dream in one small way, pretty soon there will be another small way, and then another small way, and then another small way. I'm going to close with this idea that I've been looking at lately, and I think it relates to the story. I don't know. One never knows. But it relates to the story in my mind in that there is a difference between seeing and recognition. So Joseph sees that there is a pregnant woman before him that he did not impregnate, that he's supposed to marry, and yet after the dream, he recognizes that it is something great. We can see a person who appears to be homeless or a person who appears to be down and out, and we can see it. But if we go into a more contemplative space, if we go into our inner Mary and our inner Joseph and our inner birth of wholeness, which is the Christ, we can see that we are one with that homeless person. The other day, through practice of this, I was driving up Sulphur Mountain Road to go see hike with the dogs, and the sunrise was coming up, and I just looked at it, and I said to myself, oh my goodness, this is God, this is love, I belong to that, I belong to that, we all belong to that. And what I found, you know, in those days when I was treacherous and tenuous about going into ministry and wondering and having doubts and fears and coming here and having doubts and fears. You know, I always referred to it as my ministry, that I have my ministry. But I think it's really something different. I think it's that a ministry has me and that a ministry has you. Because whatever you're doing, whether you're a teacher, a therapist, a program director, I don't know what everybody does, an office assistant, a nurse, retired, a gardener, whatever it is that you do, that's your ministry. That's the wholeness that wants to come through you. And beyond what you do, it's who you are, and that is the wholeness that wants to come through you too. And I'm not sure that that belongs to you, but I am sure, and I know that you belong to it. You belong to something so much greater than you can ever imagine. And I honor that in each of you. I cherish that in each of you. And I celebrate that in each of you. And so now, let us pray. And as a